On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN. And our segment, now you've heard him on with me many times, and of course some of our other personalities here at WGN Radio. He is the man with the plan when it comes to movies. I call him like Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. And part of our kind of drive-in movie series, where we're going to take some of those movies, don't have to be car movies, doesn't have to be movies about automobiles, just movies in general, because you got to think back to some of those romantic attachments we had with our automobile and the movie watching experience. Imagine those scenes where there would be hundreds, maybe thousands of cars with all sorts of sound and music and laughter and people talking and all the kind of things you can't do now, and then a blurry screen far away with terrible audio coming out of speakers that have been sitting out in the rain for years. And that's what you had. Now, of course, we have it where the theaters are state-of-the-art places with comfortable seats that recline and rumble and high-definition viewing, and you're never allowed to bring your phone out or even talk to somebody else because that would distract from the movie-watching experience. And a guy who always helps us get the most out of our movie-watching experience, whether it's to recount old movies and kind of break down some of the action of our favorites, or to highlight and preview some of the biggest ones coming out. And this is it. And he mentioned it a little bit off air. This is the start of the blockbuster season for movies as far as those summer movies coming out. For a movie that has been just so anticipated, the original was kind of a sleeper hit. People didn't know necessarily what to make of the original movie, but the second one, much anticipated. And by all accounts, it is starting to get the vibe. It is living up to its billing. On the line to verify that is our good friend and the one and only Blake Stubbs. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, as always. And I just want to say I'm really excited to talk about this film. This is a fun film that I can't wait to get into.
Well, okay, so the movie is Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy came out just a few years ago, and it was one of those where you had kind of underwhelming, unfamous superheroes, and you had actors who are sort of slightly non-known, or maybe known in different capacities, as you know, because Chris Pratt was a guy that was in some humorous television and a couple different movie roles, but not, you know, your superhero leading man type role. And in the end, when the smoke cleared on this thing, it was just a runaway hit. I saw it early on, and when people were asking me yesterday, Dane, why did you see in the beginning Guardians of the Galaxy? And it was because it had that Marvel name. I figured, well, it's going to be okay. You know, and I like, you know, your I don't know, galactic-based thrillers. But this one, Blake, has had all of that success, which has made stars out of so many of the cast members, Chris Pratt for sure. And now you have this where that the sequel is so anticipated and the stakes are high. And by all accounts, I've heard that it lived up to all that hype.
I would definitely agree with that assessment. The big thing that I've always, and much like yourself, when it comes to Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, as a franchise, if it's its own franchise within the Marvel Universe, it is a fringe property as far as the comics go. I mean, it has a loyal following. It's been around since the 70s. There have been various teams, much like kind of like the X-Men, except Guardians is supposed to be this more humor-based ragtag group of heroes. And so the film, you know, it was kind of a big risk for Disney and Marvel to tackle. However, going back to when the first one came out, I don't think there was ever a better time for them to have done that. You know, they had proven success with Iron Man and Thor and the Avengers. And now it's like, well, now we can branch out and try it on the stuff that, you know, might hit. It might stick. And I think it's pretty much a unanimous, you know, as far as the circles I run in, and I'm a pretty geeky guy, but also just casual moviegoers, they love Guardians of the Galaxy. It's just a fun movie. It's a fun group of people to watch play these parts. And like you said, I mean, Chris Pratt was known, but he wasn't known like he's known now. I mean, right. Guardians, you know, as Star-Lord, the role of Star-Lord for him put him in the driver's seat for Jurassic World. They, you know, for a while there were rumblings he might take over Indiana Jones, like as a dream thing for fans. You know, I mean, like the sky is the limit for what he can do. He's also got some dramatic chops, too.
He is a talented guy, but it takes a certain kind of something. There's so many, and Blake, you know this, there's so many great actors out there who are not necessarily movie stars, and then there are movie stars who, whatever role they're in, they're still, like Robert Redford is just Robert Redford in every movie. You know, right. he isn't a different guy, and he has some range as an actor and is certainly accomplished, but he's a movie star. And Chris Pratt, right, he just showed up on the scene, and it's not easy to be that. And it's one thing to get in there and be an iconic, like you'll be the new Batman. You know, you're stepping into a role that already has a lot of gravitas. Star-Lord, he had to start from square one from scratch and make that into something that was very, very cool, and he's done that. So when on the cool side, and I want to get your opinion on this right away, the thing that I loved most about the original was the irreverent humor, and I also loved the soundtrack. Is all of that stuff still front and center in this one?
Very much so. In fact, the ante is upped quite a bit when it comes to the humor. I mean, now it feels like a group of characters that are all very comfortable in their costumes, comfortable in their shoes. You know what I mean? Like some of this is old hat, but not the way the jokes are delivered. It's not going to, you know, I was in a packed house last night when I saw this film, and a lot of the laughs, including visual laughs, like nothing verbal, no like actual great witty, you know, banter, but like the physicality of how they play their roles. And especially, you know, in the case of Groot, baby Groot or young Groot, however you want to call him. Everybody's saying baby Groot, but the way that these characters, you know, walk across the screen or deliver a sight gag, I'm so glad that the, you know, what I would consider in some cases, in some films, a lost art of physical comedy, it's very much present in Guardians 2. And I want people to make sure they're watching this movie and enjoying it, not just, like, hearing what's funny. Because, I mean, you have Chris Pratt in your movie, all right? I'm sure there's an entire other cut of this film somewhere in James Gunn's, like, private collection that's just like Chris Pratt for 2 hours being Chris Pratt. Right. Because he's that good, you know, he's that talented. But at the same time, you know, the work of Bradley Cooper as primarily a voice actor on this, much like he was for Rocket Raccoon in the first film, he's dead on. In fact, they all get some sort of emotional pull. This is how you know James Gunn, who wrote and directed this, really loves these characters. Everyone in this movie gets something truly great and emotional that they get to play. And taking an actor like, you know, Dave Bautista, who is proving himself to be quite talented, you know, with a WWE professional wrestling background, right, many, that's all he is. There's some greatness in his performance that I think some people started to notice. There were critics that were like pointing out, you know, Dave Bautista is really a good fit for this part. But in this film, he gets to play a little bit more. And I think that that shows, you know, James Gunn loves his characters, loves his troupe of actors, because that's essentially what they are now. I mean, they're a franchise, you know, troupe, and he gets to give everybody something really good to sink their teeth into. And I'm going to get to that a little bit later. There's one actor in particular that I know James Gunn has always wanted to put front and center in this franchise, but couldn't.
Right. So, well, here's the thing, though, Dublik, is that you have, and he has been making kind of more out of almost nothing on the comedic side, because you look at it like on paper, if someone hands us, okay, it's a little tree creature and all it says is I am Groot, that's it. And you're going to get lots of laughs, going to, you know, sell action figures, going to be awesome. And then even on the Dave Bautista side, certainly he's got, you know, the chops from on the wrestling side. But this is a guy with a limited everything as far as, you know, he's as powerful as he may be. He's a little naive and the vocabulary, but they find a way to, in a smart way, make all of that fun and entertaining and kind of flesh those characters out.
Correct. And I remember reading an article, and it was a very touching article, actually, following the release of the first film. You know, the one of the gags in the first film about Drax, the character that Dave Bautista plays, is that he doesn't understand metaphors. Like, his race of people, like the planet he's from, they just don't get them.
Right.
And I read a really touching article about how a parent of a young boy, I believe it was, who lives with autism or Asperger's syndrome. He was watching the film, and of course, you know, he doesn't laugh or register things the way a casual moviegoer does, I guess, in a way to coin a phrase, a casual moviegoer. We're going to talk about casual moviegoers a lot, but this young boy managed to connect with the character of Drax, and in such a way that he found he loved the movie, and the mother of the boy, like, told this reporter, and they said, you know, like, my son watches a lot of pop culture-related films, but he finally connected with something. And that says a lot about, like, what, you know, this fringe property, this thing that, you know, wasn't necessarily built to totally succeed, was put in the right hands. The story was crafted in a very touching, beautiful way, but also hilarious way. Great action, you know, cinema way. But also, there's a connection there anyone can have with it.
It's going to be, I mean, it is not an easy thing to do. There are people out there making movies all the time. Oftentimes, you know, they fall a little bit short in one area or the other. Maybe they're really great in the special effects or the action, or maybe the acting, but but rarely are you able to pull it all together and then add some humor in it too. And so that's one of the things that is going to be tough. We're going to talk about James Gunn a little bit later on in our conversation, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because as you move into the success of the first one, where they are coming together, not necessarily friends, starting out as enemies, having a common goal, they find these connections and this rapport with each other, then they, you know, join together to save the galaxy. And then now the second one, it's tough to take that and then still have it be as fun, that all the camaraderie, and then also have a kind of this serious battle with a villain, you know, where you've got to kind of, it's got to have, that's one of the things with Iron Man, you know, sometimes, you know, it's always great with Robert Downey Jr. and it's always great with everything that he's doing and the humor and a lot of stuff he brings to the table. But the villains sometimes are a little underwhelming sometimes. So how did they handle this? Because, you know, you had Thanos was there, and then you had some of those other kind of, and you've got just this whole, I think, Marvel team of people they could just kind of bring in. So how did they work it on the villain side? Was it up to your standards as far as a serious threat?
It absolutely was, because this film, more so than the first one, where they were trying to establish who the team was, and like you said, unique personalities, they were enemies and all of these things. Now they are known. When the film, you know, takes off, like immediately from the get-go and during the opening titles, you're getting a sense that, like, they're used to battling evil and you know, like, kind of trading their services as the Guardians of the Galaxy, as in they are known now. I mean, like, in the first film, there's a joke where Chris Pratt walks in and he says, "Haven't you heard of me? I'm Star-Lord," and no one knows who he is.
Star-Lord,
people
man.
Know, yeah, I'm Star-Lord, man. People know who they are now. And so they're sort of, their skills and their way of doing things is a bit, you know, still them. It's very true to them. But then they have some differences within the group because they've been doing this for a while now. And so they do have, you know, to deal with their inner conflicts, but also there is a bigger villain that's going to, you know, show his or her face as the film goes on. And then there's also sort of like a hot pursuit element to this movie. Not to, like, you know, say, oh, it's a lot like Smokey and the Bandit. But I would love to discuss how the movie is somewhat like a chase film, right? Because there's also another element that's kind of barreling down on the Guardians because of something they did. And so it's coming at them from all directions. They're also having to battle their inner conflicts and within the group and some interpersonal, you know, like between each other, like one particular character versus another. And they also get separated. So it's a matter of, like, trying to make sure that this unit, this thing wasn't just a fluke in the first film. You're like, oh, this ragtag group of people, and now we're going to put a name on it, and now it's a thing. No, they have their struggles. And so this film, and this is something that I came away from the theater really loving about this movie, is that, you know, when we've gone to see these Marvel films, it's been one right after the other, and they all feel like they build one right after the other up to, you know, a big thing like an Avengers film. This film feels very different from the rest of all those other sequels in that this feels very self-contained, as if to say, hey, we had a lot of fun telling that first story, but now we're going to tell one where we just focus on this team, and it's going to stay within its own, you know, sort of universe. And it'll have some loose connections to the big picture, sure, but we're not going to, you know, forget that we fell in love with these characters, and we're going to keep growing that relationship between audience and character. And we're going to do it by creating a story that's multi-layered. Characters, everybody gets their own little emotional moment or scene to play. And then also, you get to see some really big guest stars in this film. They do play important parts in it.
So here's the thing, right? Some of the benefits you get by having that successful film is you have characters that people know and love and can identify with, and you get to flesh out some of those storylines that were sort of introduced, but also the success of the movie has, you know, everybody wants to be in it. And so I had heard that there are some really cool cameos from a bunch of different people. And so, Blake, fill us in. I mean, I don't think it's blowing the story at all to fill us in on some of those cameos. Like, who are some of our other favorite stars we're going to see in space?
So the big ones that I can just name, because there have been a lot of articles saying they're going to be a part of this. It's just a matter of some people don't know who they are playing. One is Kurt Russell.
Yes.
You mentioned movie stars earlier. And look, I think after seeing Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight, that Kurt Russell is a bona fide movie star. But he's a bona fide movie star with some serious chops. And so when he, you know, finds a project that he really wants to do, it's kind of a treat now, because he doesn't do as many projects as he used to. And he gets a lot to play with in this film. I mean, he's on screen quite a bit. He has a very big impact on the overall story, and I really don't want to spoil like who he is or where, you know, he fits into the narrative too much. But I just want to point out that, like, if you've ever loved Kurt Russell in something, you're really going to love him in this movie.
And so
and
does he bring
who he's.
I mean,
oh,
you bring up you know, Snake Plissken. We know him as, you know, he's got some of those kind of fantasy chops and, you know, and tough and gritty and all that. But people love him also because he has that kind of warm side and that incredible sense of humor. Is that front and center here, too?
Absolutely. And actually, I was going to say, this is one of the reasons why I think people will love him more is because he's able to both be dramatic and very, very funny. I mean, a lot of his scene work is opposite Chris Pratt. And you know, like Chris Pratt, there was some interview he did early in the production, you know, behind the scenes featurettes they were releasing during trailer season for this film. And he was talking about like how it was such a dream to work with Kurt Russell. And meanwhile, Kurt Russell was just like, man, I'm like the old guy in the room. I'm having a ball doing this. You know, like they're just letting me have a blast. And it shows in his performance. I mean, he definitely gets to, you know, monologize a little bit. He gets to have some really fun, quirky scene work with Chris Pratt. He gets to, they actually do the de-aging process with him in one scene, and it looks fantastic. I mean, every time we see this in a film, we like, you know, in Rogue One, we saw Grand Moff Tarkin and thought, wow, that looked great. It looked like they brought Peter Cushing back to life. Whereas in this case, it's the actor playing a younger version of his or herself, and Kurt Russell looks awesome de-aged. Like, the process did very well. And I don't know if it's because, you know, he's one of those Hollywood types with great bone structure or what it was, but it worked. And then you also have another big name, Sylvester Stallone.
Nice.
Has a part in this film. And I don't really want to go too deep on who he is or what the implications are because they haven't announced who he's playing. Okay, now I've seen it. I don't want to spoil it for anyone out there who is going to see it. But just know that Sly has a really cool couple of scenes in this. And he does... It's a character he's playing that harkens back to an earlier era of the Guardians lore. So they're pulling. You know, they're pulling from what made the Guardians and their origin stories and everything.
Right.
He is an actual character you could go look up and read about. He's not just something created for the films. And I think he steps right into that world or that universe very well.
So for the Sly Stallone fans out there, that he is not going to be revisiting his famous role as Rocky Balboa. So he's going to be a legitimate bona fide character within that comic universe.
Correct. And then there's some other Flash cameos that I really don't want to spoil because they come up in the end credits. Because as you know, the Marvel films are known for their end credits sequences.
Yes.
The big thing about this film is that it has five short little sequences during the end credits, all different, all unique, all telling different parts of where this is all going. And in some cases, it's just for fun, you know, which is another thing Guardians is becoming very known for now after two films. It really is the fun mini franchise within the big universe of Marvel films.
Well, I know on the cameo side, like we always see, you know, Stan Lee always makes that cameo and you never know where he's going to be or who he's going to be, but he'll always be in there kind of like the horror film director that always, he always had a kind of a scene in it.
Alfred Hitchcock always used to put himself in his films, you know, blink and miss him. And that's how they always treat Stan Lee. It's like, well, he's, you know, he created or had a hand in making a lot of this. So, you know, it's now a great sight gag when you see him or hear him, you know, pop up out of nowhere. He is in the film, definitely in the film.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is so I know you don't want to divulge the characters, but are they in a place where they kind of fit within the film, or is it sort of Sharknado, where you just throw celebrities, like, in the movie doing anything?
No, they definitely fit within the film the way they should, you know, in an overall, like, narrative sense. For example, I don't really want to spend too much time on the Sylvester Stallone cameo, but what felt like a throwaway, you know, like sort of like a Sharknado, like why did Sylvester Stallone have to play that part in the beginning of the film? The second time you see him, you get why, you know, why they put a really cool, you know, big name actor in that role. And he really carries himself well and like fits the, you know, the mold and the look and the style of what that character should be. And so it's one of those things where like, if you, I don't want to say you're going to roll your eyes or anything like that because you see something early. Just know that I honestly did, because I went back with someone and talked about this after I saw it. Like, every little foreshadowing element pays off by the end of the film.
Wow.
Every single one. And that's one of the things that I don't know that a lot of critics or fans who might have seen it last night have been pointing out, because in my conversations I haven't really heard it. I actually thought the script was very tight on this. I thought it showed signs of being a script where the director, who's also the writer in this case, James Gunn, really fell in love with writing this, because I feel like he proved himself with the first film, and he really got sort of a blank check to make the second film what he wanted it to be.
And let's talk about James Gunn. Now, I know that you wanted to have that opportunity to feature him, because it's one thing to have that success and kind of prove that, hey, you know, that you deserve to have all the opportunities. But sometimes that can go wrong, you know, where you have maybe too much latitude, where it looks like, and it sounds like from your assessment, that all of his instincts, you know, are right on point. And when you give him the opportunity to do exactly what he wants, everybody wins.
Right. And so here's the thing about James Gunn, because many people may not know this. I mean, when they, you know, hired Joss Whedon to do the Avengers, that was a big get. People know who Joss Whedon is. This is the guy that created Buffy, The Vampire Slayer, Firefly. He's directed some films. He's directed television, written, produced, the whole deal. No big surprise there. Jon Favreau, you know, the guy that did Swingers. You know, Swingers did Iron Man 1 and 2. He's in the films as well. So, like, you know, they were getting big names to direct these films. James Gunn, up until they hired him for Guardians, you know, 1, was really known as a screenwriter and only had two Hollywood films, I would say, although they are more or less independent films, to his credit. And then he got started back in the Tromaverse, which, if you're familiar with the Tromaverse, Lloyd Kaufman was this sort of Roger Corman of the 90s. Late 80s, early 90s. He did the Toxic Avenger films, the Sergeant Kabukiman films, one of which James Gunn wrote and directed, I believe. And then also, you know, gave James Gunn a shot. He produced one of his screenplays, which was Romeo and Juliet, which is this, like, horrendous Romeo and Juliet, you know, that, you know, has a cult following. Okay, so James Gunn is like a cult director who got to step up and play with the big kids and got to just sort of get a property that, you know, if you just look at a photo of James Gunn, you think that is definitely the director of Guardians of the Galaxy. He looks the part, he talks the part, he writes the part, he also directs the hell out of the part. And so I've always felt like when you watch these big tentpole films, you know, you fall in love with the actors and their performances, and that's who they make the action figures out of, right? But the director in this case is one that I cannot ignore, because this is definitely a James Gunn through and through production. The guy writes it, he directs it, he directs his actors, he writes for his actors. I'm sure he helps, you know, helps them get everything that they want out of their performances, because it shows. I mean, two times now in a row, this guy has made a movie with the same characters. It has been both fun, well-written, and beautifully directed, to the point where, I mean, like, if you sat and listened in my theater and didn't watch the film but just listened to the audience last night, you had a lot of ahs, you had a lot of ohs, laughter, tons of laughter, some gasps, and you also just had people literally with smiles on their face. Like, if smiles could make noise, right? you would have been wearing, you know, earmuffs, because it was so loud. Like, that's how great of a director he is, I think. I've always thought this.
Well, here's the thing, is it is one of my favorite things all time, is to see these stories in whatever walk of life, but specifically here for this example in the movie world, where you're seeing someone and come, you know, virtually and at least publicly from almost out of nowhere, get an opportunity and really take and run with it. And you can, and here's where the level of difficulty is a little bit better, because as talented as he is, if he had a framework of success to work off of, it may have been a lot easier, because he took something that no one else saw necessarily, you know, existing value in. He took something that no one had any expectations for. It's not like you show up and you're going to make the new Superman movie. Everybody has expectations, and they have a fan base built in, and you've got a head start with everything. He took something that did not exist, at least publicly and in the scene of popularity, create characters that now we know and love, some of the biggest ones, create avenues for some of these actors to become some of the biggest stars, and then to do it again. I mean, it's really awesome to see, because it's the kind of thing, like, number one, I love the fact that the movies exist because I love them. I love, you know, this is one of my favorite kind of film franchises, but to see that he's done that based on just the trust, whatever trust he had for that opportunity, and then got it and ran with it. And in such a, just a precisely awesome way, is just cool to have great seats for, and to be able to watch it happen in front of us.
Correct. And one of the other things, too, is that he's a guy that he dances with the people who brung him in a big way, or vice versa. You know, like, I mean, he gets brought to the table and makes sure that he's a good dance partner. There's one actor in question that he's worked with in the past, and that is Michael Rooker. Now, Michael Rooker is a name that, you know, Chicago people might know very well. He went to the Goodman School of Art, of theater, you know, back in the 80s. He became known for his starring role in Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, but he's mostly done character work ever since. I mean, this is a man who has the chops. I always thought he kind of had the looks, but he definitely had the chops. And now he's getting a chance to shine because in, you know, I mean, yes, he was Merle on The Walking Dead, and a lot of people thought he was great on that. And, you know, he's worked opposite Sly Stallone before in Cliffhanger. He was a character role in that. I mean, you could go back through. I mean, he was my favorite part of Days of Thunder. You know, I mean, he played Rowdy Burns, and I thought that was about as NASCAR of a performance as you were ever going to get out of an actor. You know, the real deal. Like, he felt like he could have been the real McCoy in terms of the persona, the way he played it.
Yeah, he's great.
In this film, and in the previous film, he plays Yondu, you know, the blue alien that is the leader of the Ravagers that abducted Peter Quill or Star-Lord.
And saved him. He's like, they were going to eat you. They never ate no Terran before.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that was a good, you know, and you can tell that, like, the way he plays it, he's a great student of comedy. You know, he knows how to deliver something that you know he said over and over and over again, but the laughs are there for the audience. I mean, the way he just reacts to people, he's a brilliant actor, but a great reactor as well. And in this film, James Gunn, because he's worked with him before on the film Slither back in 2006, which I loved and was his first full-on, I wrote this and directed this outside of the Tromaverse type, you know, there's some money behind it. There's some acting, you know, visual effects, the whole deal. He showed that he could be in a bigger, you know, chair, so to speak, and he could sit comfortably. With Michael Rooker, there's a chemistry there. And it's one of those things that in the end, like in this film, he wrote a way for Michael Rooker to truly be the star of this film. Now, that's in a film that has Chris Pratt, you know, number one A-lister right now, action comedy, you know, guru. You have Kurt Russell, one of the biggest movie stars currently living, and he definitely fits the bill. And you've got, you know, Zoe Saldana, who's in some of the biggest franchises right now. I mean, the list can go on and on. Meanwhile, I'm sitting here just loving every single thing Michael Rooker is doing in this movie. It is like it's the performance of a lifetime. He's having a ball doing it. And Gunn made sure that when he wrote this script, that Yondu, who, by the way, character-wise, is one of the original, I believe, Guardians of the Galaxy from the old comics, got to shine. And that's crucial, you know, for making this movie succeed in a big way. And I'm not going to say why, but it definitely is. Like, Yondu having a bigger part, and a lot of people, I mean, Dane, you love the first film. You could probably tell me, yeah, I love Yondu. He's a lot of fun. He's got a much bigger part this time around. And it's for all the right reasons.
We cannot wait. I know that it is going to be something that, and just by all accounts, it is going to be bringing in, I think, even more people that even love the first one are going to love this one, plus all of those people that were there originally. It is going to be that great blockbuster. So much great work on the acting side, directing side, editing side, special effects, storyline. And the great thing about this and the movies, and of course what we're doing here, is you get to share it with the world. And so they're going to have so many fans in theaters all across the country all summer long, and probably into the fall, enjoying Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So, Blake, let people know where they can get a hold of you. They're going to, obviously, on WGNRadio.com, they'll be able to get our podcast where we talk about and break down some of the movies, some of the different actors. I know we're going to have Mel Brooks on with us a little bit later on in the month. I'm excited about that. But for you personally, on the social media side, where can people catch up with you?
If you want to extend this conversation about movies, the best way to get a hold of me is directly on Twitter. You can follow me @BlakeStubbs. And you might be able to find me on Facebook. I kind of keep myself a little hidden. I don't want the whole world to know about all of my Blackhawks fandom and extreme nerdery. But I do know that on Twitter, I'm pretty much an open book. So if you want to find me @BlakeStubbs on Twitter.
Oh, it's going to be great. Well, look forward to talking movies with you all summer long and into the foreseeable future. And Blake, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Can't wait to do it again.